20. Measureless. They walk through empty golden halls and across floors of gleaming marble that soak up the sounds of their footsteps.
Is this what you expected?
John asks. Ol shrugs. The scale of the palace is breathtaking, designed, he supposes, to inspire awe, if not outright fear.
He always had lofty ideas about himself, he replies.
John smirks.
Well, that's an understatement, he says.
It's not pride, though, says Ol. Not really. Not the way you or I would think of it. The man I knew...
He sniffs slightly as he says the word man.
The man I once knew, he didn't really care for majesty or material riches. It was all just a means to an end. Everything was. The palaces, the titles, even the face he wore. They meant nothing to him. All that mattered was what they meant to other people. They were just aspects, John, signifying devices. To carry authority, he had to look the part. To rule a galaxy, he needed a palace like this. I assure you, he would have as soon lived as a monk in some stone cell, or in a hut on barren moors. He needed nothing. But no one would have taken him seriously. This monstrous, tasteless edifice is simply the natural conclusion of his progress.
What? Just theatre?
Dangerous theatre, Ol replies with a nod.
Another hallway yawns before them, cased in gold and lined with statues, and filled with taut silence, the painted ceiling so high it seems just a bar of pale sky.
It's everything I expected, says Ol, except the emptiness.
Yeah, says Zibes. I thought we would have been found by now, long since. Found and challenged.
There's no one here, says Crank.
I think everyone is at the walls, says Leetu quietly.
They are all talking quietly, even though no one is around, afraid of raising their voices in such a hallowed place.
Every soldier, every warrior, those that would ordinarily guard this place day and night.
The legionless Astartes gestures to alcoves that line the aureate walls between the towering statues. They look like shrines, but Ol knows they can't be. He realizes what Leetu is suggesting. The alcoves are made for sentries to stand in eternal vigilance. Ol has to adjust for scale, for the alcoves are so large. Giants stood here. Golden giants, he is sure. But they are gone now. Even the elite life wards are at the Delphic walls, fighting the last fight, and no one is left to patrol the emptied hallways of the final fortress. He and his long companions have only got this far because the place has been abandoned. No one has expected intruders at the very heart of things, for nothing is supposed to have got this far.
We should find someone,
says Crank.
What for?
Asks Sibes.
Well, we can't just wander around aimlessly,
says Crank.
He's clearly scared.
We're here on official business, aren't we? We should find someone and tell them we want to see him right away.
How do you suppose that will work out for us?
Cat asks, though Ol knows it's Acte asking the question, using the girl as a mouthpiece.
We're intruders in the sacred heart of all things, and our intentions are ambiguous at best. It would be quite a feat, and quite incriminating, merely to explain how we got here.
Cat looks at them, her eyes not quite her own.
They will find us soon enough, and I, for one, am in no hurry to greet the Golden Warriors again.
So, we just find this throne room, please?
Asks Sibes.
Yes, says Ol. We find this throne room, please.
Will we, though?
Crank asks.
We've been walking for hours. Well, it seems like hours. This palace is endless, and every hall looks like the last one.
Ol feels it, too. He tells himself it's just his imagination, but it truly feels as though they are walking some implausible, stately labyrinth. He has a poor history with labyrinths. He still has bad dreams about Knossos. He wants to ask Leetu if he can borrow the skein of thread the Astartes carries in his bag, so he can tie knots to finials and mouldings, and the fingers of gilded statues, and mark their way, for fear they are simply doubling back on themselves. Perhaps they are. Perhaps he already knows they are here, and is playing games to deceive and confuse them. Perhaps he has no interest in the distraction of an uninvited audience, and is keeping them at bay with his psychic wiles. That would be just like him, delaying the inevitable.
"I will find you," Ol mutters.
"What?" says John.
"Thinking aloud," says Ol.
"Leetu, I saw you carry twine in your bag. Can I use it?"
The Astartes pauses, and then produces the ball of red thread, wound around its fid. He hesitates before handing it over. It is the property of his mistress, and he's loath to give it up. Ol takes it with a nod, cuts off a short piece, and ties it around the ankle of a golden statue. He tosses the twine to Zybes.
"Every chamber we come to, Hebert, every room," he says, "do the same."
Zybes nods, baffled at the purpose of his new task.
"Becoming paranoid, Helanius?" Kat asks.
"Speak for yourself," says Ol.
"I'm not paranoid, just suitably apprehensive."
Ol looks at Acte.
"I meant literally, speak for yourself. Stop using the girl. She's not there for your use. She's just keeping an eye on you."
"Very well," says Acte.
Kat sighs slightly, as if some weight has eased from her. They start walking again.
"You think he's tying with us?"
John asks Ol quietly.
"I wouldn't put it past him. He doesn't want to have the conversation I want to have."
They pass into the next hall, then the next, treading softly. Each chamber is as glorious and intimidating as the last, the statuary as solemn, the alcoves as empty. But except for some details, the colour of the inlaid marble floor, the pose of statues, the designs of zodiacs and monads engraved on the Auramite walls, they seem like the same halls repeating. They also seem so clean, so clinically clean, sterile, more like a laboratory than a regal dwelling. There is no smell, no grime. After the long companion's unmeasurable years of travel through dark places and mummified cities, the caves crushed by time, the saponified landscapes of Xenos realms, the squelching morass of forgotten battlefields, the rattled husks of hive arcologies in torment, the death-rattled tumult of exoplanar corpse continents, they have become too accustomed to constant filth and dirt and foulness. This place, this palace, is too perfect, untouched and pure. Even the service hall, where they first arrived, the dispersal chamber, a utility space, even that was unnaturally immaculate, but for a layer of dust that was itself unpolluted. These rooms, in their spotless clarity, seem acutely wrong to them. And they seem purposeless. Halls that lead to further towering halls, anterooms opening to other cavernous anterooms, the constant soft hush of a gallery or mausoleum, the glitter of the giant pendulum lights. Approach rooms and colonnades lead to more approach rooms and colonnades, and arrive nowhere. Is the scale and proportion of the palace so inhuman that it defies expectation, or is the scale playing with their minds? In each chamber, Ol makes sure Zybes ties off a loop of thread. The Auramite doors at the far end of the next hall stand ajar, as though someone passed through in a hurry, without caring to close them. The hall beyond is yet another arcade of heroic statues and empty alcoves, glowing soft amber in the light of the electroflambeau. They move along it. Zybes fusses with his thread, then hurries to catch them up.
"Quite a journey we've had," muses John.
Ol nods.
"Through caverns measureless to man, eh?
I didn't take you for a student of poetry, Grammaticus."
"I'm not. I wasn't. The words just drifted into my head. All sorts of verse I was made to read when I was young. Never had much time for it. Funny how memories come back.
After lives as long as ours, says Ol.
Caverns measureless to man. I certainly remember that one. Keats.
Not Keats, Coleridge.
Be quiet!
Cat yelps suddenly. They turn and look at her. Acte is twisting her head from side to side, as if searching with her blind eyes.
What is it, witch?
John asks.
Hide!
Hisses Acte.